Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs.
Welcome to College Football Roundtable. Your source for college football coverage, including major storylines, playoffs, and can't miss game previews and picks each week. College Football Roundtable brought to you by Ask for Football.
Right. So welcome back to the Ask for Football thing. College Football Roundtable. I'm your host, Rob the Angry Colonel in Fayetteville, North Carolina. So we're calling an audible this week. So we're going to Omaha this thing and make Peyton Manning happy. We were supposed to talk about the conference craziness on week zero. However, we may have a guest, so we're making an adjustment. But you know what? We'll make mid-season adjustments right now. So I'm your host, Rob, in Fayetteville, North Carolina. We got Dano Ikebesa calling to you out of coastal Connecticut. We got Omar from the great state of Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain. And Joe from the home of the Big House. How are we doing, fellas? What did your summer look like? And did you do anything interesting? We'll start with Dano over to Omar, and then we'll wrap it up with Joe. Thanks.
I feel like I'm already in mid-season form because I saw you yesterday and we're doing this all over again. But yeah, I've been writing quite a lot, finished my book, happy with it. Don't know how exactly I'm going to publish it, but that's a thing to figure out. My daughter is leaving for Paraguay with the Peace Corps in next month, which is insane. I feel like she's heading out for a deployment. She's going to be gone for 2 years.
Wow, that's crazy. Omar, how about you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, kind of like the same as Dan. Like, you know, I feel like me getting more reps in now. I mean, I guess over the summer, did a lot of writing as well myself, a lot of interviewing, a lot of transcribing, a lot of investigative stuff. I mean, nothing like huge, like Pablo Torre investigating the Clippers for fraud or whatever, but interviewing coaches, answering some questions and stuff. And I think I grew a bit as a reporter / writer. So that was pretty fun. And then watched a lot of reality TV, as we talked about a little bit yesterday. So, yeah.
Hey, nothing wrong with reality TV. The unscripted stuff typically tends to be better. That's why we watch college football, right? Joe, how about you?
Yeah, I always told the guys at work my favorite reality TV show is SportsCenter because I know all that stuff actually happened. You know, I'm proud to say that it's been pretty much kids, kids, and more kids as I was lucky enough to get my 15-year-old moved back home to Michigan and my firstborn son in June. So I'm blessed to have them all under the same roof again. Other than that, I just want to say how stoked I am to be sitting here with you gentlemen on the verge of another college football season. I felt like it's been way too long of an off season, and man, I'm ready to go.
Yeah, I know that feeling. So me, busy with work, traveling more than I'd like to, but you know, travel is good because it means we're engaging with clients. But seriously, folks, like, we are back. College football is back, and we are leaning forward into the next football season. But really quick, we'll talk about College Football Roundtable, just so you guys know, if you haven't joined us before and this is your first time, College Football Roundtable is basically our opportunity to talk about college sports and college football outside of the Army season. We have a specific Army football show, so if you're an Army football fan, highly encourage you to check that one out. But for us, this lets us talk about general college football. We cross-promote this with the Veteran Trash Talk community. That's where Joe came from. Joe's part of the Veteran Trash Talk Network. And so they help cross-promote this to get it to a wider audience because we know that there's not just Academy grads that are college football fans. And so it lets us cross-promote the show to different places, people and places. We talk about the other service academies too. So for those of you...
Damn, catching hell with Rob's connection here.
Coast Guard Academy as well as... All right, my connection sucks. I will reboot. Hold on a second. Dano, if you don't mind, take the next read, and then I'll jump back in.
Yeah, so if you've listened to this show before, you know that we have a sponsor whose name is Jocelyn Bradley. She is a realtor. So if you are PCSing, which is permanent change of stationing, to Fort Bragg, she can be the realtor for you. Jocelyn is a member of the Long Gray Line, West Point class of 2010, served for her 5 years as an Army logistics officer, where she honed her passion for impacting lives. Now, as a dedicated realtor, she brings that same commitment to helping you find your dream home. Jocelyn provides exceptional personalized service to ensure a seamless home buying experience tailored to your needs. Beyond Fort Bragg, Jocelyn's network extends everywhere. So even if you're not moving to Fort Bragg, she can hook you up with a veteran realtor you can trust. It costs you nothing. I don't know if she gets anything out of it, but definitely, you know, reach out if you're moving at all. Find somebody that has some integrity to work with in your local market. As a proud supporter of As for Football this season, Jocelyn is helping us stay in business. We're trying to help you find a person who can guide you into the home of your dreams. That's kind of how all this works, right? She helps us. We're trying to help you. You help Jocelyn. This is the way the West Point Networks functions. So reach out today and let her make your next move effortless.
Thanks, Dano. All right, now that I got my internet connection fixed and the Chinese are no longer jamming me, we'll move on to Service Academy recap. So really quickly, typically at this part of the show, we talk about Service Academy. I'll take this since Dano just did the read. But last year, Air Force, the Zoomies went 4-8 last year. They went 3-5 in the Mountain West. Key losses were to Army and Navy, of course. Their key wins were Bucknell, San Jose State, Wyoming, and Colorado State. I mean, do we care if Air Force ever has a winning season? I personally don't. However, there are people out there that like the Air Force Academy, so we're going to cover them. Army last year went 7-6. They were 4-4 in the American Conference. Their key losses were to Tarleton State, ECU, and Navy. Key wins last year were K-State, UTSA, Air Force, and then the Fenway Bowl over UConn, which was a pretty impressive victory. We saw a breakout for God's Powered and Huawei in that game as well. So I think, you know, as we get deeper into the season, it'll be interesting to see how the Service Academy shape up, just because we'll talk about a little bit later, but with a lot of the conference shakeup in the Mountain West, teams are moving all over the place, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Navy, the Mids ended up 11-2 last year, won the Commander-in-Chief's Trophy. Their two losses were North Texas and Notre Dame. Hey, North Texas, not a surprise there. I mean, Drew Westermaker is a stud. We'll see what he does when he gets to Oklahoma State, seeing that they basically transplanted that whole offense from North Texas, to include the coach, to Oklahoma State. We'll see how they plan out in the Big 12. Their key wins, of course, were over Army, Air Force, USF, and Memphis. The Mids look good. You know, we'll see if they reload or reboot this year. They had a lot of senior talent. I think they're kind of in the opposite place of Army this year, you know, whereas Army has a lot of rising seniors. Navy had those guys last year, and those guys played very well together. So we'll see what they can cook up this season. Also, during this segment, we talk about Coast Guard and Merchant Marine Academy. One of the coolest things about their matchup now for the Secretary's Cup is it's going to be televised every year now. So they've got a contract with ESPN, and this year it's going to be played in Audi Field, which is a soccer stadium, but they're going to be playing in Washington, D.C. on December the 14th, and that game's going to be televised. So if you want to go see a cool televised game, you know, and watch some decent football, I mean, that's a good game. If you haven't watched the Merchant Marine Academy or the Coast Guard, they do pretty well. Take a chance. But now we're going to move on to the part of the show. We're going to talk about the top 10. So just so you guys know, we did a composite top 10 this year. So we used AI. Oh, my gosh, don't freak out. But we used the AI to basically consolidate all the different polls and venues and reviews, and then say, hey, you know, of everything that's out there, what's out in the public space, people talking about college football, give us a composite top 10. Joe will run this down. Typically during the season, we'll run down the top 10 until they release the playoff bracket. And then from the playoff bracket forward, that's what we'll talk about during the season. But over to you, Joe. Thanks.
Yeah. So what I did is I did kind of a review and key additions and what teams have done in the offseason, what we can expect through the top 10. So if I run long, I'll make the next one a little bit shorter. But at number one, we got the Ohio State Buckeyes coming into 2026 with high expectations, looking to reassert dominance in the Big Ten, sporting a bolstered defense through the additions of a pair of Alabama standouts and defensive tackle James Smith and edge Quay Rasaw. Hopefully I said that right. Blended with UCF defensive tackle John Walker, secondary help from Earl Little and Terry Moore from Duke, and watch out for the Buckeyes. They are essentially loaded. At number two, we have the Oregon Ducks after going 13-2 in 2025 and falling to eventual champion Indiana in the national semifinal. The Ducks have a stud quarterback in Dante Moore and a retooled defense through a high-profile portal additions. Will the higher roster turnover on defense hurt or help the Ducks in 2016? That's the question. I'm expecting their games to hit a lot of overs in Vegas this year. At number three, we have the Irish. Do I believe this is a little high for them? Yes, I do. Having said that, after coming off a 10-2 2025 and missing out on the playoff, Notre Dame has a massive chip on their shoulder coming into this season, and they've added two high-profile deep threats for C.J. Carr to throw to in the portal, and Quincy Porter and Mylon Graham, both out of OSU. Will it translate to the Irish finally winning the games against ranked teams? I can't wait to find out. Number four, we got the Georgia Bulldogs, and don't sleep on the defending SEC champion Bulldogs after losing in a high-scoring game to conference foe Ole Miss in the playoffs. They have retooled and reloaded as well. Kirby Smart added secondary, pass rush, and edge help along with and O-line help along with several portal pickups on offense in the skill positions and a great recruiting class. I feel like Georgia has a point to prove again this season. At number five, we got the Texas Longhorns coming in with the highest NIL budget in the country. Arch Manning and a high-powered offense is looking to be the greatest show on turf this season with a monster portal hole, and the crown jewel of which being Cam Coleman of Auburn, and a brutal schedule including OSU, at Tennessee, at Oklahoma, at A&M, and at LSU. The Longhorns will be provided every opportunity to prove if they're elite if they run that gauntlet. At number six, we have Indiana. The defending national champs are looking to reload and go back-to-back, replacing a Heisman-winning quarterback that led you to a 16-0 conference and national championships, as well as next to impossible. But Kurt Cignetti went hard in the paint on the transfer portal, getting quarterback Josh Hoover out of TCU, wide receivers Nick Marsh out of Michigan State, and Shaz Preston from Tulane. Having said that, the Hoosiers have a daunting task of running the conference responsible for the last three national title winners. I don't know if anybody is tracking. But if it can't be done, I believe they have the right man calling the shots. At number seven, we got Miami. I feel like the Hurricanes should be higher for how smart they made me look and how much money they made me last season in the playoffs. I said if you picked them to cover the point spread in every game, they would, and they did. Coming ever so close to a national title over a great team like Indiana had to be heartbreaking, but Miami isn't resting on their laurels. Key additions with Darian Mensah from Duke, wide receivers Vandrevious Jacobs from South Carolina and Cam Vaughn from West Virginia. Combine that with a few key matchups at home and several key additions on defense, and the Hurricanes should be right back in the thick of things at the end if they can beat Notre Dame again. At number eight, we got Oklahoma. No doubt Coach Brett Venables wants to lead his troops to the playoffs again this year in their second year in the SEC. With returning star quarterback John Mateer, portal additions of wide receivers Trell Harris from UVA and Parker Livingstone from Texas, and a great defense that gives most coordinators nightmares game planning for, I believe the Sooners are going to be a tough out for anyone this year. Look out for September 12th in the Big House at Michigan and 26th at Georgia to be the litmus test for how tough this team is. At number nine, we got the Ole Miss Running Rebels. They made quite a significant run last year before losing to Miami in the playoffs, and not to mention losing their head coach Lane Kiffin to LSU. However, they do return starting quarterback and preseason consensus All-American Trinidad Chambliss. So it will be exciting to see what new head coach Pete Golding and the number two transfer portal class do with the addition of Jonte Cook from Syracuse and running back Mekhi Frazier from MSU, giving the Rebels a nasty 1-2 punch with returning stud back Kewon Lacy. At number 10, we have A&M and LSU. Colonel Rob left me a two-way tie at the 10 spot, so let's start with the Tigers. After acquiring Lane Kiffin in his high-profile move to Baton Rouge, they also acquired the number one transfer portal class and secured quarterback Sam Levitt from ASU, along with rebuilding the receiver room by getting a commitment from wide receivers Trey Harris of Florida, Jackson Harris of Hawaii, and Trey Brown of Old Dominion. Clearly, LSU is expecting big things this year. And then A&M coach Mike Elko was busy in the offseason, added the number three portal class and securing an absolute weapon from Alabama in Isaiah Horton, wide receiver, to join an offense with returning bruising running back Ruben Owens and star quarterback Marcel Reed. They were playoff qualifiers last year, and I think they plan on returning. That is your top 10 for the preseason.
Yeah, great rundown, Joe. Like I would say right now, the portal is going to be an issue, right, for teams that have money. And like we're starting to see it. And there's some shenanigans that always happen. But we always try and illuminate some of those shenanigans here on the roundtable. So we'll pass it back over to Joe for the Blue Falcon of the offseason. And give me just a second because I've got to queue up this sweet Blue Falcon iconography. It's legit.
Look, it's the Blue Falcon.
All right, over to you, Joe, for the Blue Falcon of the offseason.
That guy always fumbles. You know, the Blue Falcon of the offseason, now this one may seem a little harmless, but nonetheless, it is a really slimy thing to do. For a head coach of a major Power 5 college program to call you out and chastise you publicly in front of your peers on television, you have definitely crossed the line. So for new head coach of the Ole Miss Running Rebels, Pete Golding, this one is for you. I've heard of some pretty shady recruiting tactics in my day, but when the ACC Defensive Rookie of the Year, linebacker standout Luke Farrelly from Cal, committed to Dabo Swinney and Clemson, you text him to entice him away from Clemson while he was sitting in the classroom at Clemson, that definitely takes the cake. Let's think about this from the kid's standpoint. He just committed to play football at Clemson and is transferring from Cal. That is no small undertaking. Geographically alone, it's a huge move for a kid that age. Then when he's just trying to plant roots, he's got another coach and grown man promising him the world if he just transfers again. I feel like the age gap here should be the real problem we all have. You're a grown man, probably a father, and you're muddying the waters for a kid who just made one of the biggest moves of his life to satisfy your team's needs. For that reason, Pete Golding, before you take the field this season, you need to swing by AFF and walk down the sacred halls of the Blue Falcon, because you have earned this season's off-season Blue Falcon.
Thanks, Joe.
I don't know if you saw that when Dabo went off on him, but he really did.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. And I think one of the other things to watch out for, and Joe and I talked about it offline, was dudes that are coming back now to college because they didn't make a practice squad.
This, so now this disgusts me. This is disgusting. I had not thought about this until yesterday. Made me want to vomit.
Yeah, like you've got it's a offensive lineman from Texas, I believe. He will remain nameless, but I guess my man declared for the draft, didn't get drafted, went to two rookie camps. Rookie camps didn't work out. So now he's back at Texas collecting that NIL check because he can make more money as an NIL player at the University of Texas. Yeah, than he would as a practice squad guy. And guess what, folks? This is probably not the end of it, particularly if guys only have 5 years of eligibility. They may try and sneak back in and collect another check from a respective university. But speaking of that, we got to talk about the hold my beer of the moment of the offseason, and I think it leads right into the reason why this kid has come back to the University of Texas. Joe, back over to you.
I drank the beer.
Yeah, I mean, because we're in week zero, there are no plays or performances to talk about. I think we have to talk about Texas one more time. I know I've previously mentioned it, but there was a lot of talk about Arch Manning and whether or not he was going to be the elite talent he's been touted as and have great success at Texas or not. So for all the doubters, the Texas faithful said, and I quote, hold my beer, watch this, and are coming into the 2026 season with an estimated roster evaluation of $48.7 million. Ooh. Need a receiver? Here, take two. How about Cam Coleman and Hollywood Smothers? Not to mention the talent they got in the linebacker core, in the portal, and the offensive line. My hat is off to Texas. They are really shooting their shot this year and don't care who knows it. Having said that, if I was Arch Manning, that sure would feel good that my school had that much faith in me. Or does he melt under the pressure? Either way, I can't wait to watch the games. And it really is impressive how Texas went all in for their guy this year. So I had to give him a little props.
Yeah, I think that's going to be interesting because, again, name, image, and likeness is a thing in college football. And whether you like it or you don't, that's the new environment. And, you know, I think they have to double down on success. Like, hey, Arch Manning looked good last season. I think the hype got to him a little bit the first year. Now he's in the seat. So it's sink or swim for him. But speaking of sinking or swimming, we're moving on to this week's topic. And this week's topic is conference realignment and chaos. And when I say that, it's very interesting. So we're back to the Power Four and now the Group of Six, because, you know, nobody wants to give the Pac-12 their flowers now that they've reconstructed themselves and resurrected from the ashes. But right now, looking at the way that the conferences are looking for realignment, Pac-12 has added some new teams. So Boise State went from the Mountain West to the Pac-12 as a full member. Colorado State moved from Mountain West to the Pac-12 as a full member. Fresno State, San Diego State, Utah State, all from the Mountain West, all moved over to the Pac-12. So the Pac-12 actually has some teams in it again. And so the two previous teams that were there, was it Washington State? And God, I forget the other one that was up there, but I'm sure somebody will correct me in the chat. Those have all joined. And then in the weirdest move of weird moves, like this is the biggest head scratcher of them all, is Texas State moving from the Sun Belt to the Pac-12. I guess you don't have that same television contract that Texas has, or, you know, some of the other bigger schools. So this will be an opportunity to get some more TV time, because I did some research and looking at it, believe it or not, the television contract for the Pac-12 runs until 2031. So all these teams moving over, it's actually a smart move to get them some more television time. But let's pause there really quick. Let's go around the horn. We'll start with Joe, over to Omar, and then to Dano. What are your thoughts on the newly reconstructed Pac-12?
you know, I kind of focused mainly on like Texas State, and because I thought that we might run over a couple of different things, I didn't want to repeat things. But as far as the Texas State joining the Pac-12, I think it's kind of strange. But from a recruit standpoint, I'd be stoked if I was going to Texas State right now, knowing how many big stadiums and I was going to see the possibility of playing on a nationally televised game is pretty cool as well. And, you know, going through what you said about Jim Mora going to Colorado State, I thought, you know, as far as the community goes out there in Fort Collins, I got family out there. I don't know a better community that deserves a better coach and team than Fort Collins. Definitely a beautiful place. And, you know, the conference alignment didn't really affect the Big Ten too much, so I didn't do a deep dive into it in the offseason. Definitely the Texas State thing, I'm thinking, like, maybe it's not good for the conference, but is it better for the little schools and the underdogs? I think so. So, you know, there's good and bad to every situation. And I think if you take the good out of it, it's definitely better for the smaller schools in this realignment.
Yeah, I think nobody's going to question the small schools. I think the problem is it doesn't fix anything, right? So you rebuild a conference that used to be one of the marquee ones, right? So it used to be a Power Five conference, and now it's just like, oh, they're just an add-on. They're the group of six, right? So it doesn't really change the perception to college football sports writers. We'll recognize it because we're fans, right? Like if I'm a Texas State fan, like, yeah, bigger stadiums, more TV time, that's great. But from a college football standpoint writ large, you know, are the sports writers going to give them their flowers like they're supposed to? I mean, like there's some sickos out there and like there's people that will pay attention and follow these teams. But when it boils down to, you know, are the sports writers really going to be like, hey, look, if you run the table in the Pac-12, are you going to legitimately be considered for a playoff berth? Right. Probably not this year for sure, but in the near future. Omar, over to you. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. So I guess first off, the whole Texas State thing, like the Pac-12 really didn't have many other options. It's been a long, litigious offseason on so many things, and I'm so tired of hearing about legal documents. Even today, like the Patriot League said Villanova's quarterback couldn't play even though he got a TRO. Like I learned what a TRO is this offseason because of college football. But that being said, like the Pac-12 didn't really have any other options. So, I mean, that's that. Honestly, I can go on a long rant about how the Pac-12 handled this offseason and the 2025 offseason building the conference, but they're back to 8, and that's great. What I will say, though, is I think this is a very solid move. I mean, it may be lateral, but I think it's slightly upward in terms of TV partners for the Pac-12, because the big thing with the Pac-12 is they're not being used as streaming content like their contemporary, the American, is. And even then, it seems like the Pac-12 has a more healthy relationship with their TV partners. If you go down the line, USA, the CW, I mean, the Pac-12 is producing this stuff for the CW for them. And then USA, they're the only like conference that has games on USA Network. It's a very healthy relationship. You compare that to the American, where the American, I think it was 2024, 2025, just straight up did not fulfill the amount of television appearance obligations that they had. And nothing happened. It was essentially ESPN was just like, what are you going to do about it? We're not going to air enough games for you guys. So it seems like a very healthy I guess a move up, a very, I guess a good upward move, even if it's slightly for those programs, I will say. I do think, though, that in the end, the moves for the Mountain West Five, it's kind of, I think the logic's kind of on a shaky ground, because they're, you know, the schools are trying to dissociate from, you know, the Nevadas, San Jose States, the bottom dwellers of the Mountain West, when like every conference is going to have a bottom that's going to, you know, bring down the conference. And I think that's going to be true in the Pac-12 too. So I just want to see it on the field too, because I'm just tired of the Mountain West Five just peacocking their chest saying, oh, you know, we're back, we're a power conference, and oh, there's going to be a ninth member too, which I'm waiting for the ninth member still. So
yeah, that's true. Dano, how about you?
Yeah, that is exactly my take too, is it doesn't seem like all of these teams are necessarily getting helped by some of these moves. Texas State's move to the Pac-12, I think, is kind of a, like you said, a lateral. I think the Sun Belt had competitive, very interesting football. Of course, more broadcast partners is better. We've said that many times, right? We've gotten so much craziness because you've just got ESPN and Fox. So to the extent that you're broadening that out and getting teams on the USA Network or, you know, the CW or whatever, that's good. And that gives the whole sport room to grow and room to put more eyes on stuff besides just the huge conglomerations. So that's very positive. But the rest of this kind of drives me crazy. I mean, you had Rice move to the American a couple of years ago. They were a middling team in CUSA. Now they're like roadkill in the American. The fan base would probably like to move to the SEC. You got Tulane's fan base. Every time you engage them on social media, you know, banging their shoe on the table to go to the SEC. They're not going to sniff the playoff from the SEC, whereas they made the playoff last year from the American.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane to me. You know, I'm probably most interested in North Dakota State moving into the new Mountain West and wondering if they'll win that thing. But all of this, you know, whatever. We had a good thing. You blew it up. Now you got to build a new, hopefully good thing. What I really want out of all of this is for somebody to call Air Force and move them into the American for as a football-only member so we can simplify his Army scheduling a little bit. Other than that, more TV networks is good, and we'll just see how it shakes out.
Yeah, that's true. And so, quick note, like, if you don't know, like, most of the time, most people across the country, you can grab the CW with the antenna, right? It's usually a digital broadcast, so you can pull that down without having to have a streaming service or anything like that. So if you are, you know, a Pac-12 fan, that's probably some good news, right? Because again, like, I don't have to have a crazy cable package or streaming or one-off purchases from Sling or whatever it is, because there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of trouble in, like, watching college football. If you watch a lot of college football, it could be pretty painful because you have to literally, like, I don't know if you guys have seen it, like, James does a spreadsheet. I have a spreadsheet now of all the different channels and different configurations of what you need to have so you can watch college football on a Saturday. But you know, that's for the hardcore sickos, or you could just put three TVs on the back deck like Dano does and then just pick which games are available.
That's the only way to do it. Just get yourself another TV. You can get a TV for $100. Come on, don't be like that.
But I have multi-view. I watch five games a window, man. So it's one of those things where, you know, it just depends on your personal stance on how to watch college football. But I think, you know, outside of the weirdness of Texas State, going back to what Joe mentioned, I think Joe Moore and Colorado State are going to make out the best of this new realignment, because again, it puts more eyeballs on them, more TV time. My biggest problem is, for the Pac-12, in order for them to return to prominence, people just have to be interested in the game. And that means move your damn start times for the game, right?
How many times do I have to watch Hawaii play some interesting team at freaking 2 a.m? Like, I'm 53. That shit's not happening.
Right. The Pac-12 after dark is an issue, right? Like, we make it a joke. It's funny. It's people talk about it. But the reality of it is like, you got to get some eyeballs on these games. Like, even if you kicked at Mountain Time, right? Go ahead.
Sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, but it's almost like they call it the Pac-12 after dark so they don't have to call it the Pac-12 in case you can't sleep.
Yeah, right. Pretty much, because, like, you know, like, if they move to Mountain Time, I think that would be better. You know, some of the kicks, because, like, if you kick off at 4 o'clock, you know, that's 5 or 6 o'clock in the Eastern time block. And that's where, look, majority of their sports writers are on, you know, East Coast time. And there's a lot of folks, like, look, Bristol, Connecticut, where ESPN is on the East Coast. Right? If you're trying to, you know, convince one of those looky-loos to freaking write about your team, you can't kick off at midnight. I mean, that's just the way that it is. And you owe it to your players to give them the best opportunity, yes, to get televised. But the good thing is, for those teams that are now in the Pac-12, they're going to get a lot more TV time and more tape means more opportunity in the future, right? Scouts can see more of your play. So it may change the dynamic. We don't know. It's the first year. And then just really quick, we'll run down the Mountain West, Air Force, Hawaii, Nevada, New Mexico, Northern Illinois, North Dakota State, San Diego State, UNLV, UTIP, and Wyoming. What's weird is Northern Illinois is they leave the MAC for football, and, you know, the Middle America Conference picks up Sacramento State. I don't know if that's a win for either one of those conferences.
Freaking crazy, man.
Right.
Imagine being on their volleyball team.
Yeah. Right.
Suddenly you're in the Mountain West.
Yeah.
Well, those are football only
moves. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Those are only football only moves. Yeah. Okay. But even still, football only moves. It's just, it's weird. I think, like, as Dano mentioned, you know, North Dakota State moving to the Mountain West, I think of all these moves, that might be the best offseason move, you know, going up from FBS to FCS. All right, Dano, could you give us the next read, please, if you don't mind?
friends, if you've listened to this show before, and I do realize it's been damn near a year, you know that we have a sponsor in Craig Oxane, area sales manager for the Money Store. Craig is a member of the West Point class of 1994, licensed to lend in all 50 states, but based out of Chicago. Friends, Craig is one of the most successful VA lenders in the country. Why? Because he offers you super competitive rates to give you the best deal that he possibly can, but also because he is the kind of guy who you could just pick up the phone and call and have a conversation. And when you're trying to get a mortgage and buy a house, like, that process is super confusing. You've got interest rates moving all over the place. You're trying to get your house appraised, trying to get your move scheduled. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on. And when you have questions about your mortgage, like, at the end of the day, that's not a thing you really want to worry about. You want to deal with somebody who cares, right? Pick up the phone, have somebody else that you can talk to, not a call center, not a random big box bank or a mindless website. And as we said, this is how the West Point Network functions. Craig is helping us stay in business here at As for Football. And we are trying to help you get the best deal on a mortgage that we possibly can by introducing you to the very man that you need to meet. Plus, Craig does not charge lenders fees for veterans. It's a gigantic savings, like $1,300. Guys, save yourself $1,300. So Craig Oxane, area sales manager for the Money Store. Check him out. The link is on our website. Just go to askforfootball.com. All three of our sponsors have these little business cards there. Click on them. You'll be talking to Craig or Jocelyn or Greg Iannacelli in a couple of hours. It's too easy.
Thanks, Dan. So we got one last thing to talk about for conference realignment, and this was the one that kind of started me thinking about this topic. Was, I don't know if you saw it, and it'll be on a thumbnail for the podcast. It's the poop-eating grin on Kirby Smart's face, right? Like, so at some point during the offseason, the SEC has started to message that they are going to leave and try and create like some kind of super conference because they don't like the way things are going. Bottom line is, you know, they... Right. Well, but it's the same thing. It's the same thing that happens every season. Right. We know this, like the SEC, there's going to be one team that's going to run the table and then one team that's going to be really, really good. And it's going to have a loss because they've had fratricide across the, you know, across the board within the conference. I mean, if you look at it last year, you know, in the playoff, what happened? You know, Ole Miss and Georgia took on each other and Ole Miss got the nod. All right. You know, Lane Kiffin notwithstanding, you lost to a team that's in your conference. That's pretty damn good, right? Like, it wasn't like they were like scrubs because they made it pretty deep into the playoff. But right now we've got the SEC talking about, hey, we're going to leave and start our own conference and abandon the NC2A. I think, like, if this was 10 years ago and we were talking about conference realignment and, you know, Nick Saban was the coach at Bama and Kirby and they were, you know, wrestling back and forth between who is the top team in the SEC, maybe it makes sense. But today it clearly doesn't. But we'll toss it out there for you guys for your comments. We'll start with Joe, over to Dan, and then we'll end up with Omar. Thoughts on the SEC bouncing out of the NC2A?
You know, it sounds a little bit like sour grapes to me. You know, they always say there's a lot of joking in truth. And when Shane Gillis went on that panel with Nick Saban and said, yeah, it's kind of weird that the Big Ten's doing so well now that everyone can pay their play, Saban did. It did not get received by everyone. Myself, yeah. I thought it was hilarious. But it's like all of a sudden the tables are even where everyone with the biggest budget can go out and handpick a team. And it's, I'm like, what do you guys, did you guys expect to dominate football for the history of football till football was over? Like, let somebody else eat for a little bit, for crying out loud. I don't think
that is what they expected.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going anywhere. I think they'll have a couple of good seasons and this stuff will start to level out. I may be wrong, but I don't think it's happening.
Yeah, for sure. Omar, how about you?
Yeah. I find it hard pressed like that to think that like any college fan would even care about a self-contained SEC like Big Ten league, because we already have the NFL and it's like honestly, college football is great just because like the big landscape that you're in and just being a part of that ecosystem, like it's like a rising tide that lifts up the SEC. You know, maybe it lifts up the SEC more than other conferences, but the other conferences are lifted up as well. I mean, if the SEC is in a self-contained kind of area, like I find it hard pressed anyone's going to care. And like, I just think about like the upsets, like in an alternate universe, like the SEC breaks away already, and then Vanderbilt beats Alabama in 2024, and it's like no different than, you know, when a 2-13 team in the NFL beats a playoff team late in the season. Like, I think that happened in 2020. The Jets beat the Rams when they went to the playoffs, and the Jets were like 2-14. Like, no one cares, honestly, because it's a small league. These teams play each other over and over again, you know, and it's just another week of business, you know. So I mean, the breakaway stuff, it's just kind of annoying. I feel like a lot of, maybe not casual fans, but diehard college football fans are just kind of tired of the SEC. Like, I'm tired of it. I'm just tired of them dominating. My sticking point is the fact that all three windows on ABC are SEC windows. And it's like, when I was a kid, you can see three different conferences, or a teenager, kid, or teenager, you can see three different conferences on three different windows. And that's just not good for anyone right now. So I don't know.
This is why you need the different networks, man. This is why it's important to get the CW and the USA Network, TNT. And like, you got to have that, or else you're stuck with exactly what you're talking about right here.
Yeah. Dano, your thoughts.
Yeah. Sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, Omar, but it is all about, you know, broadcast monopsony power. I honestly think they're going to pull it off and build their minor league team, you know, build their little minor league at some point. And it is literally just going to be the NFL 2.0. But I know exactly how that works, because we already have the NFL 2.0 and the XFL or USFL or UFL or whatever the hell it is now.
Yeah.
And nobody watches that shit, because it's professional players that are almost good enough to be at the top of their game. That's, you know, it's like the uncanny valley. You know what I'm saying? Where if you draw something, it's good. If you have real life, it's good. But if it gets too close, everybody's like, gross, what is that? That's what this is, the uncanny valley of football. It's not quite college. It's not quite the NFL. Let me tell you, nobody's going to give a shit. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think it's just foolish. I think the other part of it is, it's like, look, you know, that and playoff expansion is just annoying. You know, like last year, Ryan Day was like, oh, we need like 24 teams, right? What are you talking about, man? Like, if the national championship in major college, or the national champion in major college football, has more football contests than the NFL champion, the guy who wins the Super Bowl, it's a problem, right? Because that's one of the things that, you know, the players always complain about, is the season's too long, right? You know, when we were kids growing up, it's 12 games, then it's 14, now it's 16, right? So you
17.
Can, you know, you run 17, 18 games, you know, so you have to win 20 contests in order to be the champion of your respective league. And I think that's just too much, right? You know, at some point we do want these kids to graduate. You know, the NC2A has basically put the law down and says, hey, you got 5 years. So, you know, get with the program and support, you know, your players moving on to do something else. And at least to have them go work for Hertz and do rental cars is better than, you know, Frank Harris staying in UTSA for 37 years and being an old man. All right. So we're going to move on. I just want to drop this super cool graphic in there because I worked on it hard in the off season, but we're going to talk about it when we get back. Think about it while we're waiting. Who's your dark horse team that people won't see coming until it's too late? Team that will get at least 8 wins. And that will be our weekly lock for this week.
Weekly locks.
We'll go Joe, Omar, and then over to Dan, and I will close it out.
Boy, am I going to sound like a homer here. But I'm too close to ignore what I'm hearing, boys. A lot of noise coming out of Ann Arbor, and it is mostly positive. I feel like Michigan got lucky getting Kyle Whittingham. He returned a bunch of starters that entered the portal in his first week in Ann Arbor, so they believe. I feel like Michigan is going to surprise a lot of people against Oklahoma in week 3 and pull off the upset, go 10-2, and make the playoff. So big surprise here, Trigger Joe is going with Michigan as this team that he is picking to go to the playoffs and will.
Nice. All right. Omar, how about you?
I believe, boys.
Yeah, well, I'm staying in Michigan, and I'm going to talk about a team in Kalamazoo, Western Michigan, which I don't know if a lot of people are on the Group of Six like press run just looking at it, but this is a team that a lot of people think can make some noise in the playoff race as the Group of Six representative, or I shouldn't say that, I guess, as a conference representative, because technically five conference champions get to make it in. But Western Michigan returns an NFL caliber running back. That's Central Michigan. Central Michigan's the Fighting Drinkles, but Western Michigan. I'm sorry.
Oh man, now I feel stupid. All right,
I'm sorry. I should have said after, but Western Michigan is they're the defending MAC champions.
Okay,
they return NFL caliber running back. They return a starting quarterback. They return three starters in the secondary. But I think the biggest takeaway is the fact that they play Boise State at home, which could legitimately be a sort of regular season elimination game for the playoff. I mean, if Western Michigan goes 12-1, only loses to Michigan, but beats Boise State, then you're looking at a playoff team. And I will say, Boise State, I mean, they had their great playoff year in 2024, but even then, I feel like before then, they've been on a decline from like what Boise State is, because I mean, 2022, they lost to UTEP on the road. So this is like, even still, Boise State, I think, is very beatable, even though they're in the Pac-12 now. Like, so Western Michigan might play themselves into a playoff bid, honestly. So
nice. Good call. Dano, you got something?
Not really. I wasn't ready for this one. You know what? If Joe can be a homer, I can be a homer too. I say the Tennessee Volunteers.
Okay.
Damn it. they're like the perfect poster child for why the SEC wants their own network, because they got a 105,000 seat stadium and they make a shitload of money, but they're never quite good enough to actually make any noise in modern college football. So what we need is to rig the system so we get them in, because they draw a shitload of eyes. So I'm going to say that they understand that the assignment and somehow win 8 games, get the last seed in the playoff again, and get smoked.
All right, that's fair. I mean, hey, the Volunteers, they just need to bring back T. Martin and start rubbing on those jerseys with the giant shoulder pads. And for me, so I'm going to stick with the heater from last year, and I love it. Like, so I'm going to go with the Fighting Haneses. There's no longer the Fighting Hanes Kings. Sorry, Joe, we're going to go with Justice Haynes, who transferred to Georgia Tech. And I think the Ramblin' Wreck will win eight games, probably 9, maybe 10. And in the craziest twist –
that is crazy.
But in the craziest twist of fate, they're going to make it to the ACC championship, just like Duke, off of some goofy technicality, because the ACC is not going to clean their act up between last year and this year. So those shenanigans will still happen. And then expect a first round contest. And this is completely speculation. First round contest, Notre Dame versus Georgia Tech, number 1 versus number 16. I think that'll be like the craziest freaking playoff shenanigans in the history of the world. But those are good picks. But normally what we do during this point of the show is we give our picks and leans for the week, and then we will be tracking it. I did not pull out the belt that will make its first appearance next year during the week, or next week during the week zero show. But we have hardware on the line, so whoever picks the best will get the hardware. We made some adjustments to the storing this season, so if you're part of the Firsty Club, you can toss your hat in, and you have a chance to win the strap. And in addition to that, I have a autographed St. Jeffrey Munkin Army football helmet for the top picker in the Firsty Club. So all you have to do is win something. You might get the belt and the helmet, or both. You know, you can get both or one of each, but definitely some incentive on the table for everybody to participate. And I'll do this last read so we can wrap up the show. There's a reason why you don't need another workout. You need a coach who's an expert in proven fitness protocols, but more importantly, someone who's survived total physical and mental collapse of themselves, then pulled themselves from the fire and rebuilt themselves even stronger and better. Greg Iannicelli, a West Point graduate of class of 1997, U.S. Army veteran, successful software enterprise sales executive, IFBB pro bodybuilder, NCI certified fitness coach, and now the founder of Warriors Physique Fitness. After losing everything, his marriage, his identity, his confidence, and his physical and mental health, Greg completely rebuilt himself from rock bottom through faith, discipline, and elite level training. At age 50, he became the overall physique bodybuilding champion at the NPC Masters U.S. National Championships in Las Vegas. He earned his IFBB Pro card, proving that it's never too late to become the warrior that you're meant to be. Greg is a national champion. Like, how often do you have access to a national champion that's willing to coach you to success? And that's what Greg is here to do. Greg's mission is to coach men and women who are struggling to stop drifting and decline, to resurrect themselves physically, mentally, and spiritually with his online coaching program. If you're ready to reclaim your strength and confidence and your warrior ethos and identity, apply now to Warrior Physique Fitness and start writing your own comeback story. I'm going to pause there. We owe you guys some updated information, because the discount is going to change, because Greg has a new partner that's just going to help him take in more clients and process more people, which is just going to be more of a better benefit for those of you that are on active duty or graduates from West Point or even in the Firsty Club. He's going to make some discounts for you. But like all of our sponsors, Greg has a little business card on the side of the webpage at Ask for Football. Just click on it, fill out the paperwork, and you can connect with him at any time. Dano, do you have a favorite thing?
Nah, I don't think so. I will say no. I will kick that over to Omar for a favorite thing.
Omar, do you have a favorite thing?
Favorite thing for this week?
Oh, no, wait. I take that back. Sorry, Omar. I'm going to steal your thunder. Yes. Yes. As for football, lost our photographer, Lynn Fern, at the end of right before the start of this season. Lynn is moving to Texas, which is good for her, but bad for us. So we have a new photographer. Mike Heat is the new As for Football. I hesitate to call him a staff photographer. He's more like a partner photographer. But so follow Mike Heat on Instagram. We'll be putting that out in the mailer on Friday. And I'm fired up because we got a lot out of having a photographer, much more than I thought we would. And I'm excited that we got one. So there you go. Sorry, I made that harder than it had to be.
All right. And Omar, now you have a little bit more time to think about what your favorite thing. So go for it.
I guess from a roundtable perspective, my favorite thing for this week was Cal rolling out those sweet 1970s Joe Roth throwbacks, which if you have time, about an hour, look up the Joe Roth story. I need to watch a documentary still. But in short, this is a quarterback that was struggling with melanoma, ended up dying after the season. By all accounts, a great man, a great guy. And it's great that Cal will be resurrecting, or I guess memorializing him once again after a two-year break in the Joe Roth Memorial game. So UCLA, Cal, if you close your eyes and squint enough, the Pac-12 is back and Joe Roth is back on the field doing great stuff in the royal blue uniforms.
Awesome. That's pretty sweet. All right. Well, hey, we've reached the end of the show. This has been the College Football Roundtable. Hey, we really appreciate you guys checking us out. Again, format is roughly the same that we'll be having. Next week, we'll be talking to our guest. I won't want to plug him just yet until we get everything hammered out and get a little bit more details. However,
he's going to tell you how to bet. He's a betting expert. He would say invest.
Yeah, he talks about sports investments, which I have never heard of, but it makes sense if you can play the market correctly, I guess. And so he's going to come on and give us some insights on that. We'll still do the regular format for the show, but that's going to be the topic this week is sports investment. But we thank you guys for checking us out here. And for the crew here at the Ask for Football College Football Roundtable, I'm Rob, the Angry Colonel, calling to you out of Fayetteville, North Carolina. We got Dano Ikebeso calling to you out of Coastal Connecticut. We got Omar, the Burger Popper, calling to you out of the great state of Oklahoma. And Trigger Joe is from the home of the Big House. We thank you guys for joining us this week. I can't believe we are starting the 2026 season. Thanks for everybody checking us out. And as always, beat Navy.
Beat them.
Thanks for joining us on the Ask for Football College Football Roundtable. Special thanks to our sponsor, Jocelyn Bradley Real Estate. If you're buying or selling, reach out to Jocelyn for expert service. If you enjoy the show, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/askforfootball. Your support will help keep the lights on and bring in more great content. Plus, you'll get access to exclusive perks and behind-the-scenes extras. Thanks for being a part of the Ask for Football community. Go Army, beat Navy, and we'll catch you guys next week.